So we have studied this Bingham flow problem, stationary model of Bingham flow, and we wanted to prove that at least in some weak sense there is a solution of this model. The key instrument, which is typical for this case, and not only for Bingham model, but for many other models in the theory of viscous fluids, is this Lehre-Schauder theorem, a fixed point theorem, which says you that if you can inscribe your mathematical model into this formal form of a mapping and study it as a fixed point of a certain mapping, depending on some parameter lambda, and you can verify three important items. The first one, that this mapping is compact. The second one, that on the boundary of the set S on which this mapping is defined, there are no solutions. And finally, that at lambda equals zero, this problem is uniquely solvable. Then you can guarantee that there is at least one weak point. And we applied this theorem to our problem, which was formally represented in this form by some shiftings, which are quite technical. We reduced the problem to the following one, and here is this parameter lambda, and we fulfilled the first item of the program. So we took sequences of UK, which we know converges weakly, and sequence of these parameters lambda, which converges, and we have proved by some manipulations and some study of this variational inequality that we have this. And then the very last step, which we made yesterday, that then we said that due to Korn's inequality, it means that we have this. And since this norm is equivalent to the H11 norm, it means that our sequence is fundamental in H1. So this is exactly item one. We had weakly converging sequence, and our operator transforms it to a strongly converging sequence, which means that this mapping is compact. So the first item has been verified. Now we proceed to the second one. So we take this problem, this mapping. Lambda is within the interval 0, 1, and what we do, we take and here for simplicity I will assume that boundary conditions are homogeneous. It is absolutely not crucial, but when I started to write, these relations are too long to reproduce them on the screen, and actually this does not add much to the understanding of main principle. So let's assume that this U0 is zero. So when we take this relation, and this term goes away, these guys goes away, and here we set in this inequality, we select this function as zero, what we can do. And then if we do this, then you have this relation. Just to outline link with the previous transparency, here in this form I left this zero, so you see what comes from what. And now you see that here we will have two terms with the sign minus here and here, and here we will have two terms with the sign minus. So finally, this two-star relation is represented like this. So what I want from this, I want to get some upper bound for my solution in the energy norm. This is the idea. To do this, I will take this term and put it on that side of the inequality. And the term which is now in the right-hand side will be put on the left one, and then I have this. So this is exactly this one. This term comes out from the right-hand side. I applied Cauchy inequality. This guy stands as it is. It is a matter of special further discussion what to do with it. And this I simply throw away because it only strengthens my inequality. In principle, I can keep it here. I can write here plus lambda, but this term is positive. So if I take it away, I only strengthen my inequality. So the crucial, the important part is this one. Okay, now let's look at this integral colored brown. Actually, it is this. It is, for any I, this is a scalar function. And this is one vector is multiplied by another vector. And what is written here, I can write like this. Because if I will differentiate squared modulus, I differentiate u multiplied by u. And factor 1/2 here is put to compensate the 2 which will come out of this. So I have this. This is the derivative which then this sum here, summation over repeated indexes, as usual, is done. So this I can replace by this. So this is a vector scalarly multiplied by this term. And then I put derivatives here and obtain here divergence. Integrate by parts. My function vanishes at the boundary, so I can do this. There are no boundary terms. But then I remember that this guy has zero divergence. So this term is zero. It goes away. It means that from this inequality, only this and this is left. And then it immediately comes out that we have this, because here I can estimate this term by Friedrich's inequality with some constant, and here Korn's inequality is missed. Because when we will estimate by Friedrich's, then we will have Korn's inequality. But it doesn't matter. Anyway, we have such a bound with some constant. And this norm is equivalent to H1 norm. We can add weaker norm and get the estimate for this function in H1 with some constant. So what is the summary of this analysis? That we have energy estimate, which is quite natural. We have energy estimate for this u, and know that it is bounded by some constant, which depends only on the data, multiplied by the L2 norm of f. So this is summarized here, that all possible solutions of this mapping of this fixed point problem belong to this ball, where this constant is calculated throughout the data. But what it means? Let's return to Larry Schroeder's theorem. Now we said that this basic space in which we work is this one. It is the closure of smooth solenoidal functions in the norm of H1. This S we now take as the ball with the doubled radius. And then for sure we know that on the boundary of this set, no one solution can be, because we know that all of them, they lie in the ball of the with the radius which is 2 times smaller. So this is satisfied. It remains to verify the last condition. And what we do, we set lambda 0. So let me return to the... We have this relation. And what I'm doing now, I set lambda 0. So all this stuff goes away. The only one which remains is this one. So we have this. What this inequality means? This inequality means that if we set lambda 0, then this u bar is just minimizer of this functional over the set of solenoidal functions. This is exactly if you write this relation, if you compare minimizer with the minimizer plus some deviation, write this difference, then you immediately arrive to this inequality. Okay, very good. So, but this is a strictly it is a non-negative functional. So its minimal value can be only zero. So if we can point out some function on which this minimal value is attained, then it is a minimizer. And indeed, we can point out such a function which is zero. So zero function is a minimizer, and this is solution of this problem when lambda is zero. Okay, but then I say that this is exactly this exactly means that we have a fixed point of our mapping, because we can argue like this. I have this mapping at with the operator zero, and I set here W zero. This guy is zero, and we get on the right-hand side also zero. So it means that if lambda is zero, and I take as W zero, then I get zero again, which means that this zero is the fixed point of such type mapping. This is what we need. This is the last item. Here we are. The story is done. We know that by this theorem that it is at least one weak solution of this fixed point problem. Of course, you should correctly understand the meaning of this result. It is a very old result, and it does not. It says nothing about uniqueness. It says nothing about details about regularity, for example, of this solution or whatever. And actually, this is related to problems with Navier-Stokes, because Navier-Stokes is a part of this. If you put k star equals zero, you will have Navier-Stokes equation. But these questions like uniqueness and regularity, they are still open questions and in the center of analysis. Nowadays, nobody knows how to do this. Now, a short outline of our plan for remaining time. So actually, I plan to discuss two more questions. The first one is we construct exact solution of one viscoplastic problem, and you will see how this solution looks like, and what are specific features of such type solutions. And then all the remaining time we will devote to short overview of numerical methods and on that how to solve this problem. So of course, This could be a matter of a special lecture course, numerical methods and plasticity, which may be 8 lectures and maybe 28 lectures. It depends on the depths of the analysis. But I will try to give you such type of overview shortly and outline some details. But today we will concentrate on this, and I want to construct exact analytical solution of one such type problem, and we will discuss properties. So we have this problem of flow of a viscoelastic fluid between two coaxial cylinders. That is, like, we have two coaxial cylinders, and we assume, of course, it is somehow a 3D problem, but we assume that upper and top and bottom faces, they are plane and they are absolutely smooth, so there is no friction. And so we analyze this part between top and bottom faces in the axisymmetric assumption. Boundary conditions are such that this internal cylinder is rotating with some speed, which may be small, may be large, but movement is stimulated by rotating of this internal cylinder. And this external cylinder is fixed. So here, boundary conditions are homogeneous, zero. We will consider this problem in the polar coordinate system, and if we apply it, then we have these forms for strain tensor. These are full description of the small strain tensor. And then we have these equations of motion in this case. So you see, if you look at it, this is a representation of convective term. This UR d u rho derivative of u rho, and this is the same term for u phi. This is a convective term in polar coordinate system related to the first equation of motion. This is projection of the equation of motion on the x rho. And this is similar on the coordinate phi, and this is on z. Here, what you have here, this is the divergence of tau, projections of this div tau. This is on rho, on phi, and on z. And what you have here, this is the gradient of pressure for these three coordinates. Conditions are axisymmetric, and it is natural to find axisymmetric solution of this model. So it means that u rho and u zeta zero. Well, the only one velocity is u phi, and these derivatives are also zero. And if you apply this to this, then you will see that the only one guy of these six which remains non-zero is this one. All others disappear. And then we recall the basic law here that stress is associated with pressure, and this tau defined by constitutive law like this. And here we apply this Bingham constitutive law that for epsilon positive we have this explicit formula, and for zero, as we discussed yesterday, we have this relation that it can be any deviatoric tensor such that its value is uniformly bounded by this constant. So this only one non-zero strain, which has this form, is convenient to represent via full derivative, which is quite obvious here. And in this case, we have that this modulus is like this. And then we have constitutive relations written exclusively in the terms of these remaining parts of strains and stresses, which are tau, rho, phi. And now this is a scalar function. This is not a tensor anymore, because all other components of the tensor are zero. Okay. And these are boundary conditions formally written. What I verbally said, they mean that on the external cylinder there is no velocity, and the internal cylinder is rotating proportionally to this parameter, omega zero. This is some coefficient, some positive number, multiplied by R1. So then it is clear, if it is R1 and it is like angle velocity, then here you have this u phi expressed like this. And on the top and bottom faces, no friction conditions, so we must have these relations there. Now let's look at our equations of motion. I start from the third one, and I want to show that this third equation in this case is satisfied automatically as 0 equals 0. Why? Because u z is 0, these derivatives are 0, we have axisymmetric solution. This is 0, phi z 0, we assume that there is no force acting along z, so nothing remains. We can forget about this equation. Now we consider the first one. In the first one, some terms remain, but only a few. Again, you see what is non-zero is this u phi rho converted with this u phi, and this last term related to pressure. So if I extract, it will be this. Of course, I kept here minuses just to outline the origin of this. Of course, we will write plus in both sides further. And then what will be with the third equation? Here, all this convective term goes away, because u rho is 0, this is 0, this is 0, and derivatives where z is 0. On the other hand, we have now this term, which is not 0, and this one. So equation number 2 gives you this differential, ordinary differential equation for the component tau rho phi. So actually, equations of motion gave us two equations which we will investigate now. And to simplify things, from now we will write, we omit these indexes and simply write tau, meaning that it is about tau rho phi, and we write u, that it is u phi. This equation is easy to integrate. It is possible to integrate it directly, and we see that the answer will be this. The tau is some constant, some still unknown constant, with this factor. To go further, we must apply some physically motivated assumptions about how such type solution should look like. Of course, the verification of that our guess is true will be at the very end, that we manage to construct solution which formally satisfies the equation. So at this step, it is a kind of guess stimulated by physical observations. And what these physical observations say in this case? That they say that if in this model you have relatively small rotation of the internal cylinder, then only a small zone which is nearby this small cylinder is moving. And all other part of this cylinder is the stagnation zone, is the zone where velocity is zero. But if this speed of rotation exceeds some critical value, then it may happen that the all media in this cylinder will be moving. So observation says that there are in principle two different solutions of two different type. One has internal boundary which separates stagnation zone from zone where media is moving, and on the other case we do not have such type internal boundary. And another thing which is also physically quite obvious, that these strains should decrease because movement is motivated by internal cylinder at point R equals A. So it is clear that these strains will be maximum there at this point, and in other parts they will decrease. So for this reason it is natural to assume that this relation holds. These assumptions are true because we will manage to find solution which can be substituted into equations and everything is satisfied in the classical sense even. Okay. So, in view of this, if I have this, let's look at this formula. Yeah? If this, then this divided by this will be simply minus 1. And then I obtain... Sorry. And then I obtain this. Now we have two zones, and this R star is the radius, is some radius between R1 and R2, and it separates stagnation zone from zone of movement. It is natural to say that this should hold at the boundary of the stagnation zone, because in stagnation zone this quantity is simply zero totally. And in view of this fact, I put this zero here. I see that tau should be minus k star at rho equals to r star. And from here, then I immediately derive this tau in such a form. And now I take this tau and put it here. Then we arrive at this relation. This is a differential equation which will be used to find u. So it is now in a bit different form. I simply extracted this part from here, take this K star here, divide it by mu, and then you have this relation. Now I divide it by mu, obtain this, and integrate. And when I integrate, we have here 1 divided by rho, which will give us logarithm, and it is convenient to write this logarithm in this form. I outline that it changes nothing because here it is some constant. So the fact which that I normalized here by r star is okay. And now, moreover, it is convenient to write it in this form, and you see this square is compensated by these two here. So we have this relation in which we have unknown constant, which is easy to find because r star is the boundary of rigid zone, and due to continuity of solution, at this point velocity must be zero. So if I put rho equal r star, this goes away, and here it will be 1, and all the whole lot should be 0, where from it comes out that this C2 must be minus 1/2. Okay, so this is now what is done. I substituted this minus 1/2, and we have this formula. But now still we have 1 unknown parameter here. It is this r star radius of free boundary, which is inside. But for it we have another boundary condition, because we know that on this internal part of an internal cylinder, here will be velocity divided by r1. And we know that exactly this velocity divided by r1 is omega 0. So we have now this relation, which is marked blue. And this relation is the source of finding ir star. Of course, this is not an algebraic, not a simple algebraic. We cannot represent this r star explicitly, but anyway, we can investigate how this parameter will depend on omega zero. And to do this, we denote by xi this ratio. It is clear that this xi will be within the interval of 1, and its maximum value r ta 2 divided by r1, and then this is transformed to this one. So we have transcendental equation with respect to this zeta, where the right-hand side is dictated by omega zero, but the speed of the rotation. And if you look at this equation and define left-hand side by letter G, it is easy to see that, first of all, this function is monotonely increasing. It has a non-negative derivative, which is only zero at the point 1. At point 1 means r equals to a. So this function is like this. And the right-hand side is given by this constant. So you see how, from here, you see how this r star, and r star is defined by intersection of this horizontal line and this curve. And you see how this r star will be changed when omega zero increases. So whatever small omega zero I have, I always have some R star which will be bigger than R1, so there will be some small zone of movement anyway. But then if I increase, at some moment when this quantity exceeds this number on the right-hand side, then there will be no stagnation zone, and the whole body of the cylinder will be subject to movement. So this is a solution of type 1. Now, let's consider the opposite case when this... it is summary of what I have said. If this relation holds, then our solution contains internal free boundary. And in this case, tau is defined by this relation, and velocity is defined by this one, and you see that you have zero solution nearby external cylinder and some solution nearby internal cylinder. And then, you can recalculate also strains out of this. And if you calculate modulus of this epsilon, of this modulus of strain, well, it behaves like this. As we believed, it is maximal here. And if you have two different velocities, this one is smaller than this one, then for smaller velocity it is like this, and for bigger one it is like this, and it is clear that if we exceed, it will go like this until some limit. But now we consider the opposite case where rotation speed is that big that this constant, this function computed on the right-hand side is exceeded definitely. Then the problem of finding exact solution is even simpler, because we do not have this R star, and we just have this stress tensor, which comes out of formula of equation 2 with unknown constant, and apply constitutive relations where I replaced here epsilon rho phi by its representation, and since in the representation there was 1/2, so this 1/2 was compensated by this 2, and we have this formula. So now, due to this and this, I take this relation and substitute it here, and I have this equation. Again, I have some ordinary differential equation. I divide the whole lot by rho. And obtain this, which is easy to integrate. Again, we have a logarithmic function in the right-hand side, which first we can write like this. But then if you look attentively what is written here, up to another constant, it is exactly this. Yeah? And at the end, we have this expression for you. Now we apply boundary conditions, which says you that on this end, our velocity is zero. So then I take zero, put it here. Here, when I put R2, this will be zero. And here will be R1 divided by R2 squared. So you have this inequality. We introduce this ratio as alpha, and then immediately it comes out that C2 equals to 1 alpha squared C1, which gives you this expression. The remaining constant C1 is defined by another boundary condition, which is this one. And if I put this guy here and put here R1, then you see that what I have is this one, that bracket is 1, and I have this expression. And in the right-hand side, I have logarithm of this alpha squared and this thing which looks quite similar to the previous case. So from here, we get C1 and substitutes this C1 in the expression for tau. So this is this C1 substituted, and pay attention that since alpha is lesser than 1, then this C1 is a negative quantity. Now we have this, and we know tau. So if we know tau, we have constitutive relation, which is this one. Now I take it and substitute it here. It is increasing monotonically as we awaited, but now we can calculate the value of this epsilon rho phi at the at on the right hand side. There are some formal algebraic transformations and which give you this value. And this value is negative because, you see, we now constructed our solution being based on the assumption that this guy is smaller than this, that one. Let me we started from here. So this is negative. So what we have? We know that our this function, this strain is growing, and therefore it attains maximum at R2, and on R2 it is negative. It means that it is totally negative. And it means that we have the picture like this in this case. Of course, if you take modulus, it will be on the positive side. And I want to end up with some remarks. So first remark, which can be referred not only to this particular problem, but to many other problems related to variational inequalities, that look here, our problem is with completely smooth data. We have smooth boundary defined by these cylinders. We have zero boundary conditions, so boundary conditions are defined by constants. We do not have external loads, they are zero. But in spite of this fact, solution of the problem has a limited regularity. We cannot prove that it is an result, something like this, that it is analytical, locally analytical, inside any subdomain in omega. This is an analytical function, or it has large amount of some derivative. So why? Because it is clear if you look here on this picture. At this point, first derivative is zero, but it is not about the second one. So even the second derivative is only like can be understood in a generalized sense only, but no discussion about further derivatives. This is typical for such type models. The second remark is literature type remark, that this matter about mathematical properties of models generated by elastoplastic and viscoplastic non-Newtonian fluids is deeply studied in this monography, which I recommend you for reading. It's a really well-written book. And the last remark, which is also related to regularity, is about results in regularity for models like Henke plasticity. We discussed with you that original primal problem in Henke plasticity can be defined only in terms of spaces like BD. And it is hardly possible to imagine that some regularity results can be obtained in this case, because this space involves even discontinuous functions. So, but there are some results, very interesting, which were derived in terms of the dual problem, in terms of the this Haar-Karman variational functional. And these results say that under some extra assumptions on the external forces or on boundary conditions, we can prove local H1 regularity for stresses. That, namely, that at any subdomain inside omega, this stress tensor has generalized derivative squared, locally squared summable. And these results has been proved in these publications. And I want to finish today at this point. So have a nice weekend.